Pacifica owned and listener supported for over 50 years. This is 90.1 KPFT and FM HD1 Houston.
Bush and Bin Laden, you think they're foes? They're in business together. Daddy Bush knows the Carlyle Group since years before been raking in billions and itching for more.
It's blood for oil, we know there's a link.
They say cold war,
we say cold pink.
It's blood for oil, we know there's a link. They say cold war,
we say cold pink.
Cold pink for freedom.
That was Emma's Revolution, and I'm Marcy Winograd, coordinator of Code Pink Congress, a campaign to mobilize congressional and White House support for a progressive foreign policy. Please join Code Pink Congress the first and third Tuesday of the month. Sign up at codepink.org/CodePinkCongress. Thank you for tuning in to Code Pink Radio, broadcast on WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City, WPFW 89.3 FM in Washington, D.C., KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston, Texas, KPFK 90.7 FM in Los Angeles, also on college radio stations and wherever you get your podcasts. Today on Code Pink Radio, during the first half hour, we will talk about our week of action for peace in Ukraine and broadcast a press conference held by lawyers for WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange. These attorneys are filing a lawsuit against the CIA and its former director, Mike Pompeo, for illegal spying. During the second half hour, we'll pull back the curtain to see who is behind this drive for war with China. And we'll visit the war resistors, those who held a protest in San Francisco on the eve of House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's trip to Taiwan. First, a conversation with Bert Knorr of the International Committee of Democratic Socialists of America. DSA is one of the organizations involved in the Peace in Ukraine Coalition. Others include Code Pink, Veterans for Peace, and you'll learn about the others.
Bert, we both know that organizing a coalition can be challenging. To get everyone on the same page, what are the unifying principles of this coalition?
Well, I think the main overall, we are the Peace in Ukraine Coalition. So peace in Ukraine is the overarching and main principle, and stopping the war is the main main goal. Along with that, we think the way to achieve that is through negotiations and diplomacy and not through more weapons and escalation. And the other thing is, I should mention, we do oppose the Russian invasion. In the early days of the war, I think the invasion surprised a lot of us, both inside and outside the peace movement. We saw the buildup, and reflexively, we were very focused on NATO expansion, the role of what seemed to be provocation, but we were surprised by the invasion itself. When the invasion happened, we called for Russian troops out, and we do think the invasion was illegal and a violation of international law, and it's been a bad thing. It's been a bad thing for the people of Ukraine, the people of Russia, and the people of the world in general for a lot of different reasons. It's raised the risk of nuclear war, among other things. So, and also, obviously, it set us back in terms of climate change and dependency on fossil fuel, and had other collateral effects, most especially in the global south. So, I think those are the main points of unity. As the wars continued, I think that the economic impact worldwide in this country have become a bigger issue. So we also are raising a demand money for human needs, health, education, climate and not for warfare. Because we see now, I think over $50 billion that's been approved by Congress for this war. And a large part of that is in weapons, which is a boondoggle for the war profiteers like Boeing and Lockheed and Raytheon. So so anyway, I might have missed something there, but I think those are the main demands. There is some fine tuning that we're trying to do as the war has dragged on and other issues have come to the fore that weren't as evident in the early days of the war. And there's some controversy within the group over what we should be our primary demands, what should be our headlines, and what should be secondary issues. And we continue to discuss those things.
Yes, generally the headlines have been ceasefire now, negotiate, do not escalate. And like you said, billions for climate, housing, healthcare, not for weapons to enrich war profiteers. But as you mentioned, there's been discussion within the coalition about this issue of weapons and where to list no more weapons, freeze the weapons shipments in the list of demands. Within DSA itself, do you think there's that kind of tension?
Well, DSA is, we refer to ourselves as a Big Ten organization, and we have, if not 100,000, close to 100,000 members, and there are differences. There's a broad spectrum, as there is in the left in general, as there is in society in general. But I should say that I've been working with, I'm a member of the DSA International Committee, and I've been working with the anti-war subcommittee and a working group right now that's particularly focused on Ukraine, the Ukraine war. And we put out a statement most recently, actually a congressional letter, opposing weapons to Ukraine. People may remember we during the when the Soviet Union invaded Afghanistan back in the I guess it was on the cusp of 79-80, and I'm a little fuzzy on the exact date, but anyway, the U.S. poured in a bunch of weapons to the Mujahideen, who were forces in Afghanistan that were fighting against the Soviet Union. Those weapons were eventually used when years later, first of all, the Mujahideen attacked the U.S. on 9/11. They were then Al-Qaeda. They morphed into Al-Qaeda. And those weapons were eventually used against American troops. There's a big black market. You know, and where does the weapons go? It gets to whoever in the chain can seize them and resell them. And oh, by the way, in the aftermath of a settlement, they could be used by whatever side of that settlement doesn't like the outcome. For example, let's say Ukraine made some territorial concessions, which it may well have to do in order to bring the war to a close and achieve a peaceful settlement. You may have elements in Ukraine that are opposing ceding any territory, and the weapons could even be used in a civil war in Ukraine at that point. So
absolutely, and
so
we
there's
know
that danger. And then the other thing is it's a boondoggle for the war profiteers.
Sure, and we know that the Azov Battalion is an official part of the Ukrainian military, and they're very much aligned with neo-Nazis. And I understand that neo-Nazis in Ukraine have little impact at the electoral arena. You know, they got 2-3% of the vote the last time, but they are an official part of the military, and they're active in the east where all the fighting has been, or most of the fighting. So again, we have no idea where these weapons are going or how they might even be used against us in the future. Now I want to hone in on this week of action. Our coalition is organizing Peace in Ukraine for September 12th through the 15th. And if anyone's listening and you want to get involved, your organization wants to get involved, you can learn about it at our website, peaceinukraine.org. The week of action is September 12th through the 15th. It's 4 days, starting with Monday, where we'll be calling Congress with the message that Bert shared earlier, ceasefire, no more weapons, billions for climate, housing, jobs, not to enrich war profiteers, and negotiate, don't escalate. So we're going to send that message on Monday to the Congress. On Tuesday, we're going to send that message to the White House, the State Department, emails, phone calls. And then we hope to get alternative voices on the media, because enough of this parade of military pundits and former generals say, yes, we need to fight this endless proxy war in Ukraine. On Thursday, we will have rallies and delegations meeting with Congress members and direct actions outside of congressional offices. You, Bert Knorr, up in Oakland, in the Bay Area, you organized a protest in front of Barbara Lee's office. Now, she was the lone vote against going invading Afghanistan. So why protest Barbara Lee?
Now, there are people, constituents, and we put up a petition. Was signed by over 150 people, all constituents of hers, opposing her vote for weapons. So that was the reason. She also took a propaganda trip to Ukraine shortly before the war with Nancy Pelosi and the congressional delegation. And I should say this, in supporting U.S. military policy in Ukraine, she's in a way doubly harmful because she's seen and looked to by people as an anti-war person, as a member of Congress that supported peace. And so she's kind of a poster child for saying, everyone agrees we need to pour all these weapons into Ukraine. And she's being used that way. For that, by the same token, she has not spoken out about Nancy Pelosi's provocative trip to Taiwan, which has escalated the growing confrontation, military confrontation with China in the region. So anyway, that's why we chose her.
Right. Okay. So since that time, we do want to point out that she signed on to a letter. I know you're not fond of this letter, but a letter that was penned by Congresswoman Pramila Jayapal, chair of the Congressional Progressive Caucus, saying we need to negotiate and not escalate. And you know, we're at the risk, we face the risk of nuclear war. So let's hope that we can bring Barbara Lee and, you know, all of these progressives who have been historically opposed to war funding to our side to say enough. We need to stop the weapons shipments and come out with us if you're listening on the week of September 12th through the 15th. Thank you very much, Bert Knorr. That was Bert Knorr of the International Committee of Democratic Socialists of America, DSA. To learn more about the Week of Action, September 12th through the 15th, visit peaceinukraine.org. Next on Code Pink Radio, we will go to a press conference held in New York by lawyers for WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange, imprisoned in England, challenging U.S. extradition. Julian's lawyers are suing the CIA and its former director, Mike Pompeo, for recording their conversations and copying data from their phones and computers. According to the lawsuit, the CIA worked with a security firm contracted by the Ecuadorian embassy in London. That's where Assange was living at the time.
We commenced the lawsuit this morning on behalf of several people who actually went to the Ecuadorian embassy to visit Julian Assange. And unbeknownst to them, we've learned through several sources that in fact, all of their equipment when they went into the embassy were taken, imaged, and in addition, their conversations were recorded by a company at the direction of Mike Pompeo of the CIA. It is somewhat startling that in light of the Fourth Amendment protection we have in the Constitution, that the federal government would actually go ahead and take this confidential information, some of which is attorney-client privilege, some of which were the journalists, and even some of which were doctors that visited Mr. Assange. So we commence an action against the CIA, Mr. Pompeo, and the various entities that were engaged in these nefarious activities based on the Fourth Amendment for damages and for the return of all this information, which was improperly gathered during the visits to Mr. Assange.
And now we hear from Margaret Ratner Kunstler, a criminal and civil rights attorney, and also a plaintiff in the case.
As a criminal attorney, I don't think that there's anything worse than your opposition listening in on what your plans are, what you intend to do, and your conversations. It's a terrible thing, and it's treated by the United States courts as a terrible thing. This is not something that hasn't happened very occasionally in the US. And the result has very often been a dismissal of the indictment. I'll give you one example, and there are others who will give others. In the Wounded Knee case, there was an FBI agent who listened in at the door and reported. He also did a couple of other things like dealing with a witness. The judge in that case dismissed the indictment for gross misconduct. And gross misconduct is exactly what has happened here. And I don't understand how the CIA, I guess through the insanity of Pompeo, could think that they could do this. This is so outrageous that it's beyond my comprehension.
Thank you, Margaret. Now we'll hear from Deborah Herbeck, a media attorney who has visited Mr. Assange.
Good morning. I am a media lawyer, and I have represented WikiLeaks journalists and videographers. I visited Julian Assange at the Ecuador embassy in London a few times during his stay there to discuss sensitive legal matters. On arrival, there was a strict protocol for the protection of Julian, we were told. Passports, mobile phones, cameras, laptops, recording devices, and other electronic equipment were turned over to the security guards in the lobby. We learned much later, through a criminal investigation under the supervision of a court in Spain, that while visitors like me were meeting with Julian in the embassy conference room, the guards next door were taking apart our phones, removing and photographing SIM cards, and we believe downloading data from our electronic equipment. Their boss, David Morales from UC Global, who appears to have been recruited by the CIA through associates of Sheldon Adelson during a visit to a tech conference, was making regular trips to Washington, DC, to New York, to Las Vegas, reportedly to hand over thumb drives and to receive further instructions from his US government handlers. In other words, during our meetings with Julian at the embassy, recordings of our confidential conversations and the contents of our electronic devices were being delivered into the hands of the United States government. I'm a New York lawyer. I have the right to assume that the US government is not listening to my private and privileged conversations with my clients, and that information about other clients and cases I may have on my phone or laptop are secure from illegal government intrusion. This is not just a violation of our constitutional rights. This is an outrage. Thank you.
Next, we'll hear from John Getz, a journalist who also visited Mr. Assange.
Yeah, good morning. My name is John Getz, and I'm the editor of investigations for the German public broadcaster NDR. And between 2011 and 2017, together with the Süddeutsche Zeitung, we were in a partnership. We were often partners, put it that way, with WikiLeaks when it came to doing different stories. And we went to the embassy. I went to the embassy repeatedly in that time, also 2015, 16, 17, to discuss stories and basically to have kind of, you know, editorial discussions about stories we were going to do or not do. And I find it quite disturbing that what was essentially a private editorial situation was conceivably or possibly or likely being listened to. The procedure that the others have spoken about was also the procedure that I experienced in the many times I went to the embassy, that my phone was taken. Often other electronic stuff was there. I'd love to find out exactly what was done. I also know, because I am and the broadcaster NDR is behind this, we also sued UC Global in the Spanish case for having listened to our conversations. And we found in that process a series of documents that they prepared about my meetings with Assange when there. And so I just find it very disturbing. And I thought that we were protected, especially as an American citizen, by the Fourth Amendment.
Thank you, John. Our final speaker is Nathan Fuller. Nathan is director of the Assange Defense Committee.
Thanks, Heidi. And the Assange Defense Committee can be found at assangedefense.org. I just want to give an overview of, and put this in context a little bit, and remind people Julian Assange is facing extradition from the UK to the United States, where he is charged on unprecedented charges for publishing Julian's currently detained in the maximum security Belmarsh prison in London. He's been there for 3.5 years, nearly 3 full years of which has been for no conviction at all. He's just in prison because the US has requested his extradition. And so here in the US, we're fighting against that extradition, but we're also building a support network in the event that he is ultimately extradited. And we want to educate the public about the dangers that the prosecution poses to all of our basic rights. Our journalists' right to publish what is in the public interest, and our own right to know what our governments are doing in our name. And the public should know the lengths that its own government is willing to go to silence the journalist who publishes information embarrassing to the regime, spying on his conversations, seizing devices of his visitors, and even plotting to kidnap and kill him, as Yahoo News reported, all while he was a political asylee of Ecuador. So this should worry anybody who values investigative journalists and journalism and the unprecedented, and should be aware of the unprecedented threat that this prosecution poses to it. So please check out AssangeDefense.org. We have upcoming events listed on our events page, and we keep covering the extradition proceedings, court reports. So you can go there for more information.
Thank you, Nathan. And now we will entertain questions. When called on, please state your name and your media affiliation.
Well, I'm Jack Gillen with Bloomberg News on the technology team. I just had a question. I was interested in your complaint about this FTP server that was used for what appear to be conversations. And I assume, and I could use some clarification, that that included copies of phones or laptops or other data that was provided to the CIA. I'm just wondering if you could just provide a little more detail about how you came to know of that transmission process. I mean, that's a pretty interesting way for the government to get that information. And if you could also, a second question, if you could speak to if there were any other government agencies such as the Justice Department or other investigators under either the current or last administration that may have gotten access to this data as well. I know you're only suing the CIA, but I wasn't sure if other U.S. agencies may have gotten a copy of this too. Thank you very much.
Sure. So I can take that. There is a Spanish court proceeding. There's a proceeding going on in Spain where all of this information is coming out. In fact, they've subpoenaed Mike Pompeo to testify. And what we've learned from this proceeding, although a lot of it is sealed, is that there was a process by which we believe the CIA actually implemented a procedure which the CIA implemented to obtain not only the recordings, that is the conversations that were had by the Assange and his lawyers, Assange and his doctors, but also, as Deborah pointed out very specifically, when one went into the Ecuadorian embassy, there was a process by which you gave them everything. And we've learned through the Spanish proceeding that everything there was copied. Every single person that went in to see Julian Assange at the embassy, all of their information was imaged, and we have reason to believe, based on the allegation of the complaint, that that was all done at the direction of the CIA, as well as comments made by Pompeo when he first was appointed the director of the CIA. So it's very outrageous conduct. And we believe that it's detailed in the complaint. There was a Las Vegas convention, there were communications, and all of which is a subject of this Spanish court proceeding.
Thank you.
Excellent. And Margaret Kimberly?
Yes.
Sorry about that. Margaret Kimberly?
Hi, good morning. Question, you mentioned Pompeo was CIA director and then Secretary of State. So these events began when he was CIA director. This is prior to his being Secretary of State?
That is correct. That is correct. And in the complaint, we detail the fact that when the very first thing Pompeo did when he was actually appointed the director of the CIA was he had a press release. He had a press conference, in fact, where he denounced Julian Assange, and he went on about how he is essentially he says that essentially, and it's in paragraphs 22, 23, 24, 25 of the complaint, he pinned Julian Assange as being a non-state hostile intelligence service. something I've never heard of before. Julian Assange, as mentioned earlier, was a publisher. To say that a publisher is a non-state hostile intelligence service sends a shockwave to the entire public, to every publisher in this country. And so that's essentially, yes, that is essentially alleged in the complaint. And that is, and those are the facts that we've learned.
Hello. Joe Laurie, Editor-in-Chief of Consortium News. A question about discovery. Are you concerned, especially now that you've included the CIA as a defendant, that they will invoke, the government will invoke state secrets privilege to prevent any discovery whatsoever?
Listen, we don't think this will be an easy task. We know the previous administration has essentially tried to block every subpoena issued. In fact, my understanding is that Michael Pompeo is even not complying with the Spanish subpoena. So discovery will be a difficult process. However, we will have a federal court judge who presumably will be non-biased, who will insist that certain documents, certain individuals be produced and be presented. So that's a process we're going to have, we're willing to take on.
Coming up on Code Pink Radio, who is behind this push for simultaneous large theater wars, a proxy war with Russia and Ukraine, and preparation for war with China? Stay tuned for the answer. And a trip to San Francisco, where Code Pink Veterans for Peace and Pivot to Peace sponsored a protest in front of House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's office on the eve of her reckless visit to Taiwan. First, Edwin Starr.
To me. Oh, oh, I despise, 'cause it means destruction of innocent lives. War means tears, 10,000 of mothers die when their sons go up to fight and lose their lives. I said, war, good God, y'all.
What is it good for?
Absolutely.
Nothing.
Get sad again.
War. What is it good for? Absolutely nothing. less than 100 days before the world's leaders meet in Egypt to tackle the climate crisis. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's trip to Taiwan leaves climate cooperation between the United States and China in tatters. It was only last year, in 2021, that U.S. climate envoy John Kerry and China's special envoy for climate issued a joint statement. They vowed both countries would strengthen the Paris Agreement by adopting long-term strategies aimed at net zero greenhouse gas emissions. Well, so much for collaboration with China, world's largest exporter, holder of $1 trillion in U.S. debt. Following Pelosi's Taipei jaunt by U.S. military transport, no less, including polluting fighter jets and warships that escorted the speaker to Taiwan, Beijing broke off climate talks and launched large-scale military drills. After Pelosi returned home to San Francisco, where one out of four face food insecurity, Senator Ed Markey, the climate champion, the guy who wrote the bill for the Green New Deal, took off for Taiwan. The purpose? Markey says it was to promote peace and stability. Markey's trip had exactly the opposite effect, as China announced more military drills around Taiwan. So why are U.S. lawmakers flying to Taiwan, one after the other? Is it because Taiwan is a microchip mecca in a sea of semiconductors? Is it because these politicians care about human rights, even though they won't protest the extradition of whistleblower Julian Assange for revealing U.S. crimes in Iraq, or call for the release of drone whistleblower Daniel Hale from prison? Or is it because Taiwan is strategically based for U.S. domination of Asia? I'll go with microchip mecca and domination of East Asia. So who is behind these congressional visits to Taiwan? Who would want to escalate tension in the South China Sea? To risk another war? Unthinkable, right? Well, the Center for a New American Security, CNAS, is thinking about it. More than that, CNAS is wargaming it. Before we go to those war games, a bit of background about CNAS. This so-called think tank was founded by Kurt Campbell, now in the upper ranks of the Biden administration, and Michelle Flournoy, once in line to become Secretary of Defense until Biden chose General Lloyd Austin, a former Raytheon board member, to run the Pentagon. Other CNAS alum include Avril Haines, Biden's Director of National Intelligence. She's the one who signed off on all those drone assassinations during the Obama administration. Another CNAS alum, Victoria Nuland, now number three in Biden's State Department. She is the same Victoria Nuland who traveled to Ukraine in 2014 to encourage the overthrow of a democratically elected president and plotted to ensure a white supremacist helped lead the transition government. A few months ago, the Center for a New American Security teamed up with Meet the Press and NBC to wargame the battle over Taiwan. Listen.
Hello there. Welcome to another episode of Meet the Press Reports, where each week we do an in-depth exploration of a single topic. Today, we have a unique and special episode. This is a war game that takes a look at how the United States might react if China were to invade Taiwan, the self-governed island, a little bigger than the state of Maryland, that sits about 100 miles off the coast of mainland China at the junction of the East and South China Seas. China has seen Taiwan as a breakaway province ever since Chiang Kai-shek and his forces fled there following their defeat by the communists in the Chinese Civil War in 1949. China has vowed to take control of this island, preferably, it says, by peaceful means, but possibly by force if necessary. Increasingly, U.S. officials warn it could be by force, and possibly sooner than we think. So what would the U.S. do? Well, the United States has ever closer ties with Taiwan, which it sees as a key partner in the Pacific security order. Whether the United States would defend Taiwan if it were attacked by China, however, is a matter of what's called strategic ambiguity, which has been the official policy for more than 40 years. The Pentagon, though, is unambiguously preparing for that possibility. And war games, which are simulations of military conflict that help develop and test strategies, well, these war games figure very prominently into those preparations. And we wanted to know more about these war games. What do they look like? How do they unfold? What would it take to win, especially in this moment we're in and what's happening in Ukraine? So to find out, we worked with the Gaming Lab at the Center for a New American Security, CNAS. This is a think tank that specializes in national security. CNAS convened two teams to fight it out here in our Washington studio. The blue team, a group of defense experts, members of Congress, and a retired Air Force general who played the role of American defense officials on the National Security Council advising the United States president. And the red team, China experts, and the CEO of CNAS played the part of China's Central Military Commission advising President Xi Jinping. CNAS drafted the terms of the hypothetical conflict, set 5 years from now, in 2027, with China poised to launch a direct attack on Taiwan to force unification after Taiwan had elected new leadership, increasingly defying Chinese pressure. How would the U.S. respond? There were three rounds and a game master from CNAS determining the new reality on the ground after each round. The red team had the benefit of proximity. The blue team had the benefit of allies and partners. Neither team had the edge, and that's where we begin.
As you can see here on the map is a very large concentration of Chinese People's Liberation Army forces at potential ports of debarkation for an invasion.
We want to focus on a last-ditch effort to deter. This is a time to be sending the strongest possible message to Beijing, both privately and publicly, that there will be very severe costs if they actually go through with this.
China has sort of seen our reaction to Ukraine, and we want to make sure that we're surprising them with how we react here.
Hit the Americans as hard as we possibly can in the Western Pacific, keep them out of the fight while we move on Taiwan.
I would support an early knockout punch against Guam.
From our point of view, a failed invasion of Taiwan is worse than the risk of conflict with the United States. Mm-hmm. We think that the United States is already going to intervene, and so we have to do a knockout punch before they can neutralize us.
Is the assumption that your assault on Guam is going to make the United States pull back?
We think it's going to make them militarily less effective. And so even if they desire to intervene, they won't have as much capacity to intervene on behalf of Taiwan.
I think we start very forcefully with a missile bombardment on Taiwan. I think we want to bring their military to their knees.
Are you making an assumption that that China is going to attack any of the alliance as they attack Taiwan or not?
I think China doesn't want to. They would like to tell the world that we're going to discipline our unruly province and it's none of your business. Stay out of it. Mm-hmm. And if we stay out of it, they'll stay out of it.
That's enough of that. Wargaming with NBC and the Center for New American Security, funded in part by military contractors. Instead of so-called national security experts meeting to brainstorm policies to thwart climate catastrophe, which is a real threat to humankind, these Pentagon wannabes are sitting around plotting a war with China. A nuclear-armed nation with one overseas base, in contrast to the United States' 750 to 800 overseas bases. Anti-war organizations such as Veterans for Peace, Code Pink, Pivot to Peace are not on board for this. On the eve of Speaker Pelosi's visit to Taiwan, these organizations sponsored a protest complete with giant ornamental Chinese lions in front of Pelosi's office at the San Francisco Federal Building. The message? Cancel your trip. The demonstrators, most of them Chinese Americans, waved signs that read, "No war on China and stop the provocations." Let's go to the protest.
I'm here today because we don't want provocation to war. We don't want provocation. And Taiwan is a part of China, and many people don't realize that Hong Kong is a part of China, Tibet is a part of China, and for years people have been trying to split up China, and it just won't work. And to think that Pelosi wants democracy as if we had it here, which we don't. And no, freedom. And the headlines in the Mercury today said she's going to democratize the whole area, the whole Indo-Pacific area. And you know, it's part of the American lie with the American dream that we're free here.
My name is Satania Tam.
What's going on?
Why am I here? Because I do not want to have a war between China and U.S. I want peace. And Nancy is really provoking the tension between these two countries. And she has no gain. She's for herself. This is no purpose. She's going to be out anyway very soon, in a few months. What is she doing here? Nothing. Except for her own benefits, probably money, probably glory, probably just world prestige. to show her power. There's no purpose, no reason to provoke China and tension between these two countries.
But the Democrats and Republicans both support expansion of military war in Asia, the Asian pivot. Why? I mean, it seems like they're united to militarize and surround China and Russia.
Well, the thing is that U.S. is a very, very aggressive. They want to dominate the world. They want the benefit. They don't want. They want to be the superpower in the whole world, and not letting any other countries to support themselves, be strong, and to be competitive for them. Of them, they are the war. They provoke wars. They invade anybody else. China never invade any other countries. They want to develop themselves. They want to help the other smaller countries. That's all. Then why? China never has any militaries in the U.S. coast. Then why is what U.S. has to do in South China Sea?
Well, isn't that part of U.S. imperialism?
Yes, definitely. U.S. imperialism. Definitely. Yes. In history, they always have. They want to colonize anywhere.
Didn't they colonize China at one time?
Well, they want to.
I mean, they were in China. They were military.
Yes.
British, French were.
Had. They cannot do it. They colonized Philippines, all the other smaller countries. And when China developed like this, they like it. Because, of course, the world is only one world. Resources are limited. They don't want to dominate everything. They don't want to share any wealth, any resources.
So there's a large Chinese community in San Francisco.
Yes.
And it would be affected by a war. There are anti-Asian attacks on Chinese. Why isn't there a political alternative to Pelosi? Because it seems like she has the majority of support even in the Chinese community.
I don't think so. I don't think she has a lot of the support from the Chinese community. She covers herself very well. There are certain things she's very helpful to the Chinese community, but the minority is that she's anti-mainland China. She's anti-Chinese. It's long history like that. And she's in the position for a long time, and most of the San Francisco people are Democrats. So it's very, very difficult to kick her out.
支持中國反對台灣
反對台獨分裂祖國我們的國家要完整台灣是中國的領土一寸都不讓支持我們的國家中國
Co-founder of Pivot to Peace. I'm also a San Francisco native, born and raised here, so I understand the issues that we're facing, and I understand what this war will do to us in the U.S. and to the Chinese American community, and we're not going to have it anymore. So that's why I have the honor of introducing this program of people who stand on the side of peace, people who represent the San Francisco community. It is an honor to start off our program with retired Superior Court Judge and my co-founder of Pivot to Peace, Julie Tang. I'm going to say that China is not our enemy. China is not an existential threat. What is an existential threat is racism and also the American policy that drives us to war. Those are existential threats. And China bashing is also an existential threat to all of the world. We Asian Americans have suffered so much since the pandemic and since Trump started a trade war. The Cold War tactics engendered by party leaders, in particular, headed by Pelosi in her attempt to go visit Taiwan now, is unwarranted. It's creating misery in America. This year alone, we are each American here, standing here, will be spending $6,000 more on consumer spending because of the runaway inflation. And recession is just around the corner. These are the things that war bring to us, not to mention the forever war mongering that our country has been involved with in the last 20 years that ended millions of people dead, especially in the Muslim countries. Do we want that for Taiwan?
No.
Do we want millions of Taiwan people to die?
No.
But those people want, right?
Yeah.
Those people want Taiwan people to die. That's why they're here, to create disturbance, to insist on Taiwan independence, and to abridge the United States' obligation to the world through the Shanghai Communique that Taiwan is part of China, and that the only diplomatic relationship that America would have is with the People's
Muslim country where people fight with sticks and are wearing sandals. China is now a nuclear country. Why are we bucking heads with a nuclear country that would create misery throughout the world? The whole world economics will be taken down for a decade if war starts with China. And the least of all, we Chinese Americans cannot afford to have a war with China, because history has told us that whenever there's a country that is at war with our country, the ethnic people of that country will face racism, discrimination, and threat of being called a spy and espionage. We have our human rights to protect, our human rights for freedom, our human rights for security, and also peace. So let's preserve our peace, let's gather up together and tell Nancy to stay out of Taiwan, bring her home back to San Francisco, take care of our domestic issues, prioritize domestic issues over foreign intervention. Let's together join up and urge her to come home and deal with our local issues, homelessness, monkeypox, and all those issues that are killing our people. So join me and say, Mei Guo Guan Zhi Taiwan. U.S. hands off Taiwan.
U.S. hands off Taiwan.
China is one.
China is one.
We want peace.
We want peace.
No new Cold War on China.
No new Cold War on China.
Thank you very much.
Speakers on the webinar were KJ No, a Korean expert on Asian affairs, Colonel Ann Wright, who is here, who is a retired U.S. Army colonel and also served with the State Department. She was one of the people who went and reopened the embassy in Afghanistan and Kabul after 9/11. There was also Bruce Gagnon, who's an expert on space weapons and nuclear weapons, and Ray McGovern, a former CIA analyst who gave the presidential briefing to more than one president. So these were people who knew what they were talking about. And what we said 2 years ago was that if the United States keeps pushing up against the red lines of both Russia and China, that war was a logical outcome. We predicted 2 years ago that our claims, the false claims that Russia and China are existential threats, let me clarify that the word existential means that their mere existence is declared a threat by the United States. By taking that position, we make war inevitable because we are pushing up against them again and again and continually escalating. Now you see that we in fact have a war going in Ukraine, a proxy war with Russia, and you see that we have high-level people in the Russian government warning about the dangers of nuclear war. Let me be a little more specific about what could happen with China. If we have a shooting incident between us and China over this visit to Taiwan, it doesn't matter who shoots first. What will happen is somebody will shoot somebody, the other side will retaliate, the other side will retaliate back. We have the carrier group, Ronald Reagan. It's a battle group with the carrier and a small fleet of ships around it, sailing to the region right now. If they get in a shooting incident and it escalates, China has missiles which is capable of sinking our ships, including our aircraft carriers. If they were to do that, what do you think we would do? Are we going to escalate and hit China? And if so, is that going to keep escalating to the nuclear level? There are strategists in the United States talking about the use of tactical nuclear weapons to intimidate our enemies. But to China, a nuclear weapon is a nuclear weapon. So these are the dangers. I'd also like to recognize not only Ann Wright, but we have Lieutenant Colonel Roger Dong, former U.S. Air Force military intelligence specializing in China. He just said to me, in war, everybody loses. And that's what Nancy should think about.
So please welcome Ann. Yay! Well, thank you very much. history person in the U.S. government as the Speaker of the House of Representatives, challenging actually the U.S. policy, the one China policy that the U.S. has been a part of for over 40 years. Well, I live in Hawaii and just happened to be in San Francisco when you all called this, so I'm so glad to be here with you. In Hawaii right now, we have a very dangerous military war maneuver going on. It's called Rim of the Pacific. 26 countries have sent 38 ships, 4 submarines, 170 aircraft, and 25,000 military from those 26 countries on a war game with an enemy, a potential enemy, and they're gaming against this potential enemy, and guess who they think that is? China. They have been sinking ships. They've been firing missiles. They've been doing everything in a preparation for a war that must not happen. There is no way in the world that the United States should ever, ever, ever be attacking China. It should not be having proxy wars with China. It should not be having proxy wars with Russia. What we need as Americans is to be forcing our government to say war is not the answer. We know that there are U.S. naval armadas. Michael mentioned that the USS Ronald Reagan has been out in the South China Sea and out around Taiwan. Well, it's not been the only one. The USS Abraham Lincoln is out there. At one stage, we had over 2 aircraft carrier groups out in the Western Pacific. All of this is a buildup that is a very, very dangerous for people of the world. So as citizens of the world, which we all are, we need to keep going after Nancy Pelosi, the Biden administration, and any...
Voices from San Francisco, where Chinese Americans and anti-war activists mobilized to protest Nancy Pelosi's reckless trip to Taiwan. To learn more about the organization sponsoring that protest, visit veteransforpeace.org, codepink.org, and pivottopeace.org. Code Pink is also a member of the Peace in Ukraine Coalition, which, as I mentioned earlier, is planning a week of action in September. That's the 12th through the 15th to send a message to Congress, the White House, the State Department, and the media. The message is this: ceasefire now in Ukraine, diplomacy to end the war in Ukraine, money for climate, healthcare, and housing, not weapons to enrich war profiteers. Do not risk nuclear war. Negotiate. Do not escalate. I'm Marcy Winograd. Thank you for joining us on Code Pink Radio, broadcast on WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City, WPFW 89.3 FM in Washington, D.C., KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston, Texas, KPFK 90.7 FM in Los Angeles, also on college and community radio stations, and wherever you get your podcasts. Visit us at codepink.org. And remember, work for peace.
Bush and Bin Laden, you think they're foes? They're in business together. Daddy Bush knows the Carlyle Group since years before been raking in billions and itching for more.
It's blood for oil. We know there's a link.
They say code war.
We say code pink.
It's blood for oil. We know there's a link.
They say code war.
We say code pink.
Was not Iraq, but Iran. They feed you lies, don't want you to think.
They say code terror,
we say code pink.
They feed you lies, don't want you to think.
They say code terror,
we say code pink.
Code pink for freedom, code pink for peace, code pink till hunger and war have ceased. Code pink for women, boys, men, and girls. Together we'll
our phones and the places we
we meet, they curtail our speech, our movement, our rights, but we won't give up
without a fight.
With the wave of the flag, our liberty shrink.
They say cold fear,
we say cold pink.
With the wave of the flag, our liberty shrink.
They say cold fear,
we say cold pink.
Cold pink for freedom, cold pink for peace, cold pink to hunger.
Relevant talk, information, and great music. This is Community Media, KPFT.
Leaving town? Neither are we. Tune into The Attitude with Arnie Arneson, Monday mornings at 5 a.m. and Tuesdays and Thursdays at 9 a.m. Political talk you won't stop talking about.
Make the connection between your favorite programs on KPFT and your power to keep them on the air. As a nonprofit organization, we don't rely on corporate sponsorship or government funding. We count on listeners like you for donations, programming, and much of our staffing. That's how KPFT and Pacifica Radio work. Without listener support, 90.1 would be radio silence. Your contribution keeps the lights on, powers our transmitters, and covers our bandwidth. Becoming a member is quick, easy, tax-deductible, and secure. Just call or text GIVE to 713-526-5738 or go online to kpft.org. Become a member today and join the special group of heroes who keep KPFT on the air and free for everyone. You have the power. Connect to 526-5738 or